Is there some direction that you're seeing your efforts refocused? You've been doing this since 2012.
Mm-hmm. At least on my own.
So on your own, and then recently were incorporated with the Green Things Farm Collective.
Yeah.
Is there some trend that you've, as you've kind of followed the pattern of where your sales are going to actually make it possible for, as you say, to farm tomorrow, how have you migrated your business over the years in terms of the marketing aspect and what you're willing to grow and what makes sense to grow?
There's a lot of ways to try and answer that question. We went through an exercise last fall that I thought was valuable and interesting, where we had record from all of the crops that we grew. We had sort of gross sales data for them. And so we had a spreadsheet, and they were adjusted based on space they took up in the field. So we sort of had like dollars per bed. And for us, a bed is 250 square feet of growing space. And just there, you've got kind of a ranking of which crop is more profitable per square footage than the others, which is more or less. But we also know that that's an incomplete picture. Some things took an enormous amount of work per square footage, and some things were almost no work at all. Some things were inside a hoop house with all the expenses that involves, and some were out in the field. Some things take the entire growing season, while other crops, you could crop three times during a growing season. And some things bring a great amount of joy to the farmer, and some things are a pain. So with that first sort of economic number, we had like five or six other categories that made an attempt at all those other things. And as a crew, we just went through and did a real quick, like 1 to 5, best to worst on all of those. And then weighted those and came up with a value for everything. It took a day, which is maybe the right amount. You know, we all kind of had a headache afterwards. And after doing that, though, if it's done well, it should tell you things you already know. Like if it's done well, you look at the top of the list and you're like, yeah, those are all crops that are all kind of slam dunks. And you go look at the bottom of the list and you're like, whoa, those are a bunch of stinkers. We knew that already. And so if you already knew it, why do it? Well, it solidifies that knowledge, and there are a few surprises. And if you have the knowledge more solidified, it really helps you when you're doing your crop planning next year. Instead of saying like, well, I thought that was a stinker, you're like, well, I know, and I know it's half as valuable as we thought it should be. And that really helps you say, okay, we're going to cut that in half, you know, reduce its size next year, or we're going to cut it entirely. And same with your good ones. You can say, oh man, this is a gem. If our whole farm was this, we'd be great.
Can you give an example of a crop that turned out to be at the top or maybe at the bottom, or something that was kind of unexpectedly showed up as a winner that you didn't necessarily know?
Yeah. And so at the top of the list, not a secret with small produce growers, you have leafy greens, a lot of the fruits, summer fruits like tomatoes, garlic can show up on there. And so a lot of those were like, oh yeah, we expected that there. But we had one that was just like stupidly far and away our winner, and it was parsley. And we grew parsley as a cut and come again, which means we planted it in the spring once and grew to a harvestable size, and we would cut it but not kill the plant. And then it would grow again, and then we'd cut it again. The bottleneck with parsley is we can't sell as much as we would want to grow. But we grew one bed, and our whole farm is, for scale, our whole farm is something in the neighborhood of like 330 to 350 beds. So we did one bed of parsley, and a very good crop can get us about $1,000 on a bed in a season. And we did $5,000 out of that single parsley bed. And so we were like, what the heck? Like, can we please do the whole farm in parsley? But that breaks us back to marketing and like, no, maybe we can do two beds and I don't think we can sell $10,000 in parsley. And so then at the bottom of the pile, they tend to look like your crops that can get trucked in from bigger farms. And that's where your onions are, but that's also where your cabbage is and your potatoes. Some of those crops that are easier for sort of medium to medium large farms to grow and ship around. They're just less dense. Like we did cauliflower and broccoli, which people love, but the spacing of the crop means that we just can't get as many dollars per square foot out of it. And we love those crops, but they just can't economically compete with some of the others. And so we would reduce the bed space we're committing to those. A surprise we saw from that was field tomatoes did quite well. And tomatoes are known to be a profitable crop, but they can be finicky in the field.
Is that unstaked tomatoes, or how do you define a field tomato?
These were ones that were grown outside of the protection of our unheated hoop house, but they were trellised. They were staked and trellised. We did not put a lot of effort or any effort into pruning them, but we did do a Florida weave and we held them up off the ground. And so we don't know, like, did we have just a good year for field tomatoes and it's a fluke? Or did we have kind of a mediocre year in our hoop and that's what evened them out? But it was really interesting to see that our field tomatoes were more profitable than we had guessed. I think that's all any farm can do is to take some reasonable records and try to improve upon itself every year.
Where is your produce going? Is it going to direct sales? Do you have farmer market stand? Do you have on-farm sales, wholesaling to restaurants?
Yes, all of that. We attend the Ann Arbor Carytown Farmers Market on Saturdays. We'd love to do Wednesdays, but we did not this year, and we didn't do as many Saturdays due to COVID. The farmers market did a great job of managing it, but it still was a year to play it safe. We leaned into our farm stand sales this year, which was wonderful. We had a third-party software, Barn to Door, that was managing a website front end. We could list our products on the website. Folks could purchase them, and then it was a twice-a-week thing, and we would package up their orders and set it out on the farm stand, which allowed for a safe, contact-free exchange. I mean, it doesn't get better than that. It was only handled by our farm crew and set out for you to pick up on your own. And honestly, even outside of this COVID pandemic, it's a great model for a farm because it's very efficient manner. And there's several similar packages that assist small farms, I guess, with the software side of that marketing.
Did other farms in the area use that as well?
I'm not 100% sure. This has been an isolating year, and I don't get to have a beer with my neighbor farmers as much as I'd like to. Whether or not they use that exact platform, I know that other local farmers are moving towards online marketing. And we also have our own CSA, so it's similar, but it's sort of a subscription-based, and folks, you know, pay in advance, and then they share in the harvest with us. We've got a few different programs for that. We do restaurant sales, which this was a lean year for that, but we have some restaurants that have been great allies for a number of years that were able to stick with us. We really appreciate them. And we are a part of the St. Joe Hospital's collaborative CSA program. And that means that the CSA is managed by the farm at St. Joe at the hospital there. But the produce is grown by maybe a dozen different farms. And that aggregation is really, really wonderful. It helps us all provide for a CSA that's bigger than any one single farm could manage. We have a flour CSA. We have a small herd of beef cattle that's mostly for soil improvement and managing the grass, but we do get a harvest. And then we have our seed sales, which are sold online and through some partner retailers. It's a big, complex farm.
Yeah, that's a lot of different marketing channels. So looking forward to 2021, is there anything going to be different that you're going to do this year? And I'm also kind of curious about the seed sales piece, because my understanding was that in the spring of 2020, there was kind of a boost nationwide in seed sales for home gardeners, which is, I'm assuming, a big chunk of what you're selling to.
Yeah, yeah. So for 2021, for our produce operation, we're trying to lean into the things that worked and try and streamline. I mean, 2020 was our first year as a collaborative operation, and so we've had a lot to learn from that. So I'm really excited to see how our field plan unfolds for next year. We also have to find what is the right scale for our operation. Like, what's the right amount to earn a living for ourselves and our crew? And what's the right amount to balance the workload? And that can be tricky. I think we're going to need to grow a little bit. And then you asked about seeds. 2020 was a very unique year for seed sales. Basically, right at the time when folks might be planting their gardens, we got a national lockdown order, which almost seemed like, hey, everyone, stay home and order seeds. The timing was perfect. Everyone was uncertain about the future, reasonably. It was and continues to be a scary time. And sort of an oddity is that uncertainty tends to be good for the seed market. And so as a result of that, the seed companies were swamped, and a great number of them had to close their stores temporarily to keep up with orders or were running out of stock. Seed sales are divided into seed company, which is the marketing, and like a seed grower, which is the growing. And so the seed companies, the way they work is every year they have a projection of like, well, this is how much tomato I'm going to sell. So I'm either growing that myself, or more likely from a larger seed company, I'm contracting it out with farmers that I trust. And so these are all deals that are made a year, 2 years or more in advance. And obviously they would be based on historic sales. And so when sales increase fivefold in 1 year, the whole system doesn't work. And that's a good problem for everyone selling seeds. But for a small seed company like mine that doesn't have the marketing resources or the history, people were looking for alternatives and they were finding me. And so sales were a real boom, which was really appreciated for us. But also since I'm growing 100% of the seeds that I'm selling, I'm not able to tailor my harvest to my expected sales in the same way. Generally, I either have a successful harvest, which is mostly decided by the size of the crop, and I'm concerned with having a large, healthy population for sort of genetic health reasons. And so when I get a harvest, it's just vastly more than I need. And so having just this explosive increase in sales, it's like, oh, I got it. And now all I have to do is mail it to these people. It was great.
This year, I'm wondering if it's going to be more of the same because we're still living in a kind of uncertain times, and people who started last year might want to continue this year. Others might want to expand.
So far, sales are real strong this year. It's not going to be as like insane as last year. What happened last year is sales were kind of normal, and then we hit March and it was just this wall and sales came in like a floodgate was opened. This year is looking to be very, very good. Whether it's going to be better or worse than last year, I couldn't tell, but it's going to be a little bit more over the course of the winter rather than all at once, which is honestly very nice, a little bit more manageable. But I'm already hearing from friends of mine at other seed companies that they're struggling to keep up or even having to temporarily shut down. And also the seed world can't react quickly because it is built on a foundation of growing seeds, which sometimes takes 2 years for a crop. And these contracts with farmers are arranged in advance. And so if last year was crazy, even if that's the new norm, this year's going to be crazy because the whole industry is going to take time to adjust. And I expect the other seed companies had the same issue as I did. When the fall of 20 rolled around and we were looking at our inventory and our planning, we're like, geez, like, where is everything? And it's, you know, it's a good problem, but you build this multi-year routine of keeping your seeds in stock and you can't just reproduce it all in one season real quickly.
Yeah, clear. The plants don't watch the news reports and they don't know what we're responding to. So,
yeah.
So one more question before we wrap it up for today. You know, community has been an important theme. Given the situation, you've already mentioned that there have been some challenges in connecting with your fellow farmers, and you've had to overcome some issues in connecting with your customers, sounds like fairly successfully. Anything going forward about community and new approaches to building community that supports your farm?
Oh man, we are missing our ability to easily connect with our neighbors. I mean, I'm sure I'm not alone in that sentiment. You know, in the past we had regular farmer beer nights where we would get together casually and collaborate, commiserate, share. You know, in the past we had the local food summit, which is always a real treat. And that was like one of the last things that happened before the lockdown. I've been getting pretty regular asks, I guess, from the other farmers in the area saying, hey, let's get the beer night going, or can we do something? Can we do it over Zoom or whatever? And I felt real kind of shy about that. Like, I don't want to put my community at risk with any face-to-face interaction. And I personally don't like this, like, over the computer. It's awkward for me. Like, I don't know what to say or do. And so I'm kind of just waiting. But you're absolutely right. Like, there's a lot of need. And I think there's need for organization beyond the go-it-alone cowboy attitude. We need more farmers. We need more gardeners. We need more seed savers. And if that means people striking it off on their own path and starting their own organizations, I'm all for that. I love it. But I think there's this next level that is going to require organizing. When folks ask me, oh, can the farmers in the area feed the community? The answer is yes, but not as we are. We saw the slice of the food market that goes to local farms increase dramatically this past year, and interest increased dramatically. And I couldn't guess like a number, but it feels to me like it went from 0.5% to 1.5%. And so the calorie needs of the community are not being fed by our small farms because the system that's in place is just inadequate. Like, there's just not enough of us, but there's also not a way for us to easily aggregate our product. There's not a way. There's a lot of just barriers between the tiny, tiny, which is our small local farms, and the mega, mega huge. They're so different. This conversation could go in a million different directions. You know, processing meat animals is impossible or very difficult. The economics of grain, storing, aggregating, you know.
So we're talking about scale here. For an individual who's got 5 heads of cattle that they want to get to market, it's difficult, or, you know, yeah, I see.
Yeah. I was just talking to a friend the other day. He goes to a local farmer's market and he gets chicken, really likes this honestly raised pasture chicken. And he asked them, oh, you know, you're a small operation. And they're like, oh yeah, oh yeah. And they're like, well, how much, you know, what's small? And he's like, oh, you know, we butcher 4,000 a day. And that didn't seem small to him. That sounds like a lot, but man, like, you just can't make it economically at a small scale with broiler hens. I think it's very challenging. And 4,000 a day is probably microscopic. Ask Tyson, what are they doing? It's more than that. So that middle space, like, if we really wanted to make a serious endeavor out of small farms feeding the community, we need some organizational changing, not just small farms becoming bigger.
Well, I know that work is being done in that area. The whole difficult problem of the two different scales that agriculture is operating at. Well, the aggregator you're talking about at the farm at St. Joe's, it's like a small scale example of how that can start to happen.
Yeah, that's a great model. And what they're doing, it's really showing the importance of marketing for small farms, because the St. Joe CSA is able to tap in to this community that is a hospital, the people that work there and the people that live near it and the people that are just sort of part of that world. Because a hospital is huge. It's this whole thing. And since they can provide this really excellent market of folks that are there every day, so it's easy for them to pick up their produce, and they're concerned about health and well-being because it's related to their work.
Which is a brilliant connection that is kind of novel that they are making.
Yeah.
That they're actually looking at the health side of health instead of just the disease side of, you know, where health starts breaking down. That's a very forward-thinking thing that they're doing. And they also have pretty extensive grounds where they can do some stuff of their own there too. So they've actually got some production going on as well there. That's an exciting thing. And maybe that's a model too that needs to be more closely looked at, because you've got a big institution, a big organization, and a self-formed community that can aggregate demand on the demand side. And if you can aggregate demand, it seems like that would get us halfway towards the supply aggregation piece of the puzzle. Is that the way you understand the problem there?
Absolutely. That St. Joe CSA, it's providing a lot. One of the things it's providing for the farms is this ability to sort of know that they've got a market for their product. And also, it takes a lot of the risk out of it. If St. Joe wants to take a delivery of head lettuce from me once every other week for the whole season or for some time limit, you know, we agree upon something, and I have some kind of crop failure, which happens, if this was like a CSA that was entirely in-house, I now have to be like, oh man, I got to write an email to my CSA members and I feel terrible. I got to explain it to them. I'm like, hey, this is really heartbreaking. We had a crop failure for whatever reason. And, you know, we appreciate you being there for us, but we got nothing for you this week. We'll make it up to you later, or we'll do our best. And that happens. But part of this aggregated CSA is then, so, you know, as soon as we know something, we call the people at the St. Joe CSA and we're like, hey, you know how we were going to do this thing? It's not going to happen. I feel awful. And they're like, yep, we get it. We're going to call the other farms. It's fine.
Mm-hmm. So those baskets get filled.
Those baskets get filled. The customers are still happy. And I'm honestly, you know, obviously I wanted to make that sale. And so I'm bummed I didn't have the harvest. But I think to myself, oh, a friend of mine is going to go get paid instead. What a relief. I'm cool with that. And I know when they have a problem, I'm going to get the call. These are the things that make that easier and just less stressful. And makes it possible, like to do a large CSA from your own farm. You really have to have a scale and an expertise at so many different crops. It's a lot.
Yeah, it really is a lot. And from what you're saying, it sounds like small farmers working together in their local communities may be one way forward. Thank you, Eric. I appreciate your time and look forward to talking again with you soon.